And welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic, Marquise Munson taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Fellas, what's going on? How's everything going?
Good. It is Friday, right? You said Friday? Okay.
Yes, yeah, I believe so. The days are all running together.
Good stuff. But yeah, you know, getting out of here yesterday was it was nice. 80 degrees, sunny. Little yard work. Mostly I didn't do a lot of it, but other members of the family did a lot of yard work, so that was cool.
So the children responded to your plea and got out and did some yard work, huh?
They did. They got out. I don't know that it was necessarily all voluntary, but they got out there. My wife got out there. I was kind of inside trying to, you know, tap away on the computer, but man, it was, I think it seems like that was the type of day that helped a lot of people, you know. When you got this stuff going on plus dreary, wet weather, you have a day like that, you're like, okay, you know, okay, this is a little bit easier to deal with now.
Yeah, I thought so too. I was outside just kind of walking around. I think I may have walked like six laps around my house just for no reason, just out there just walking. It was awesome.
Good.
I enjoyed it.
It's good for you, man.
Munson, what'd you get into yesterday?
I went outside for a little bit. Went for a little light jog.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I'm in my apartment complex, and I didn't go outside of that. But, you know, other than that, so I did. Does that count as self-quarantine still?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still technically.
As long as your distance is good.
Yeah. I'm still in an apartment complex. I didn't go anywhere. There wasn't really nobody outside. It was just me running around my apartment complex.
Absolutely. That's it.
Yeah, I think you're in really good shape.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I needed to, though. I needed that because the workouts have been kind of slow since the gym in my apartment complex closed down. So, yeah, it's been kind of slow. So I've been gaining a few self-quarantine pounds.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are doing that.
Oh, I'm definitely doing that. I went for a run yesterday, and my knees feel like, you know, probably a 65-year-old man at this point. Like, they were barking at me yesterday just for, like, what are you doing, man? You haven't done this in a couple weeks. Like, this is not what you're supposed to be doing right now. You're supposed to be sleeping and not moving around at all.
So were they barking because there's like more weight for them now?
Yeah. Hole?
Is that, what, you, is that what you're saying? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
It's not good, man. Like, that was the first time in my life where I looked around and said, oh my God, I am really out of shape. This is not going to end well.
Another thing for me yesterday, the first time, you know, in a while, but I mean, we've been trying to go, you know, get takeout and mostly places around where we live in Owensville, but we went to get food from Black Rabbit, which is on 3rd, which is just great stuff, and they've got like a curbside takeout order. So that was my, you know, I drove right through, you know, right down Broadway, and I will say, man, that first time of driving through Broadway in this reality is I mean, it's very much like, you know, like The Walking Dead or something like that. I mean, that's what came to mind, you know. It's quite eerie, but you know, up here and there, you saw like two people taking a walk, or you know, a police officer, a TV news crew. But yeah, other than that, not much.
Yeah, like Sunday, I had to go pick up some equipment for the show, and I think I might have legitimately been the only person in downtown Nashville. I was looking around, I was like, "There's no one here." It was very weird, to be a part of.
It's like all those, any of those. You watch any of those apocalyptic kind of shows, you know, that's what comes to mind. So hopefully that's not something that is revisited anytime soon once it all gets cranked up again, whenever that may be.
So, Joe, we were talking yesterday about the NFL draft for the time being, keeping their date the same beginning on April the 23rd. Well, Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner, sent out a memo yesterday saying the draft will go on as planned on April 23rd. Through April 25th of this year, and basically advised NFL teams to make some accommodations available to them, to have, you know, your essential personnel available to meet at a location where you're able to have your internet, you're able to make phone calls, be in contact not only with the league but with other general managers as well, and to go on with the draft as planned. Still some wiggle room in terms of if more people in a few weeks and by the time the draft comes around are able to meet and are able to get together, maybe you can open up team facilities at that point. But right now, Roger Goodell and the NFL advising NFL teams to make plans to hold their draft process and conduct the draft off-site. What did you make of the news by Roger Goodell? I didn't think it was overly surprising. I think he kind of laid it out in the memo a little bit of what we talked about yesterday, Joe, is, you know, you can try to, you know, move it back and pick a new date, maybe sometime in May, sometime in June. But by doing that, you don't really know if you're going to be in any better shape when you go to that date than you are right now. So they have the tools and the availability to do this draft, I guess, semi-remotely. And it looks like the NFL is going to go ahead and do that.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I know not everybody in the league's happy about this, but I think it makes sense. I think it's the right move, as what you just said there. There's no guarantee that this date or that date in the future will work. I mean, look, here's an example, Robbie. You know, media, sports media, and all media, but, you know, like sports media sometimes gets accused of, you know, groupthink, and I think it's fair sometimes. You know, I think you know, you'll see a lot of people kind of glomming on to this opinion or that opinion. I'm seeing some in the sports media, some backlash on this, like it's tone deaf to do the draft now and things like that. I couldn't disagree more. I think anyone who can conduct business now should. You know, any business that can carry on right now should. And you know, people should pump money into whatever business they can as well in their community. I mean, to me, I don't think it's tone deaf to do this right now. I think it's something that a lot of people would really appreciate, actually. And, you know, we talked yesterday too, Robbie, about the logistical side of this. You know, obviously some places are like, there's no way they're getting their team facility anytime soon, you know, in certain parts of this league because of certain parts of this country. So, I mean, this seems like if everyone has to do it off-site, you know, I mean, people can make this happen. How many people right now are having work meetings, you know, on Zoom or WhatsApp or FaceTime, you know? Or,
yeah.
I mean, you can make this happen. It's a pain, I'm sure, and every single GM in this league is going to feel less prepared than they do every other year. There's no doubt about that. But, again, if all of them are on that same field, then let's go. Let it rip.
I'm with you. Like, I look ahead, and I hear some people on social media making the tone-deaf argument about the draft. I'm going to watch this. I'll watch every pick of this draft if it takes place as scheduled from the 23rd to the 25th. And usually, I'll be honest with you, Joe, like, I pay attention after about the second or third round, but I don't sit there and watch it after the fourth or, you know, the second, third round. I just kind of go on and move about my day and get updated on picks later. I will watch probably every last second of this draft if it takes place as it is scheduled to do right now, because, I mean, that's the closest thing we'll have to watching sports in a long time, like live sports.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Mr. Irrelevant going to be on my TV full blast, you know.
We might even rewind a T-shirt of him.
Yeah, might even rewind it a few times and watch it over again. You know, I mean, it's like it's like the Eddie Murphy. Okay, here's another one. This is going to happen every single show where I test a generational gap. You know, it's like Eddie Murphy. Like, wait, that's not a regular cracker. That's a Ritz. You guys get that? You guys get that reference?
Yes.
All right, very good. You know, it's like, you know, these aren't just some regular old crackers, you know. You get a little tiny taste of sports, and you're going to, you know, lick your fingers on that. So, yeah, I'm frankly thrilled that it's going on.
I did find this interesting from Adam Schefter. He tweeted this out yesterday. It says, quote, "In Roger Goodell's memo that the draft will go on, he served warning to those around the league that criticized the league's stance." Goodell wrote, quote, "Public discussion of issues relating to the draft serves no useful purpose and is grounds for disciplinary action," end quote. Joe, that kind of tells me that Roger Goodell is very aware that some general managers and some people in the league circles around different teams are not big fans of this draft carrying on as currently scheduled, and he's already just kind of laid it out there. Hey, don't be discussing your issues that you have with this in the public, because if you do that, we will take disciplinary action as the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it also tells me that even if Roger Goodell makes a good decision, he has to at some point look like an adult. So
yes.
Here you go. I mean, come on. I mean, people are people are allowed to express their opinion, and he has to know as well as anyone, that even if someone isn't comfortable, you know, coming out and putting their name on something, there's going to be people who are complaining as unnamed sources on this thing. I mean, it's going to happen. So you move forward. You're a leader. You know you're going to take criticism from one group or another when you make a tough decision. So just make the decision and then shut up. You know,
you get paid a whole lot of money to deal with the criticism. So just shut up.
Yeah, there's just, Goodell's got to, he's got to do something that makes you question him. So this is that.
This kind of thing drives me nuts, Joe. I mean, I hate this in the world of sports, and leagues do this all the time. NHLs, they do stuff like this sometimes too, where they're just like, hey, make sure you're towing the company line on everything we're doing here. And I'm just like, do you realize how stupid that makes you look sometimes from a public perception, that this is like some, you know, dictatorship that you're running here and nobody can have dissenting opinions at any kind? I really hate it when organizations and sports leagues do this. It just makes them look so stupid.
Right, and it's all, it's not like adults are exactly like kids and teenagers, but, you know, when stuff like that happens, there are people who say, oh, okay, well, then I will then. Thank you. Yeah. You know, maybe just leave it alone and let people make their own decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think it's just, it's so ridiculous to me when this happens, but I am glad, to Roger Goodell's credit, I am glad that the NFL has made the decision to go ahead and move ahead with the draft as scheduled, because can you imagine what the TV ratings are going to be like for this draft? I mean, they're going to be off the charts.
You would certainly think so. And it's still sad when we talk about the draft. I still think I really was looking forward to, you know, how Vegas was going to try to outdo Nashville. I don't know if Vegas would have outdone Nashville, but Vegas certainly has a shot to do some stuff with a draft. And that's too bad. I haven't heard about future years, but I'm hopeful. I mean, I'm assuming they can come right back to Vegas soon, right? I mean, I hope so, because obviously they had everything all mapped out, and it looked like it was going to be really, really cool.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that they can too. Like, I don't know exactly when that would be, but I'm sure that they'll be back there as soon as they possibly can, just because I think everybody had pretty high expectations for that draft in Vegas. So I would think the NFL will be back there pretty soon. When we come back, Vanderbilt small forward Aaron Nesmith has declared for the NBA draft. We'll react to that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic, taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, Vanderbilt's Aaron Nesmith has declared for the NBA draft. He announced that yesterday on Instagram, which is what I think players do now more than ever. They announce things on Instagram. Even Tom Brady announced he was leaving the Patriots on Instagram and on Twitter. So social media becoming even more and more prevalent for these players announcing their decision. Nesmith averaged 23 points and almost 5 rebounds last season, making 52% of his three-pointers before ultimately his season was cut short after 14 games with a stress fracture in his foot that required surgery. So I don't think a big surprise that Nesmith is declaring for the draft.
No, not a big surprise. I guess I thought maybe, you know, there'd be a chance that he might declare and hold off on the agent. But, I mean, I certainly don't blame him for this. I mean, you take mock drafts with a certain amount. You can't take them as gospel. But they also, I mean, good, you know, reporters who do these aren't just guessing either. They're also, you know, they're talking to personnel people. And, you know, the thing is, when you see a specific report here or there about a team during draft time, it could be misinformation. But when it's just your general, you know, anonymous thoughts on guys, you know, you can get a pretty good picture of it. I'm looking at our guy, Sam Vecini, who does a really good job for the athletic.com. He's got Nesmith going 19 to the Mavs.
Yeah, that's kind of his projection. ESPN has him at 17. So yeah. They got him a little bit below the lottery, but still, like, that's a playoff team, possibly.
Yeah, and I mean, the general rule with this is if you are a lock to go in the first round, which means you're going to get a guaranteed deal. Now, it's only a two-year deal now. It used to be a three-year deal, but it's a, you know, guaranteed deal. You know, then go. And now, sometimes guys aren't ready, and they might get picked higher than they should get picked, and then they don't stay in the league. The whole point is to go when you're ready to stick in the league. But obviously, when you go, now you're starting the clock earlier on that second deal when you can make much bigger money. So, I mean, I think Neesmith, at his size, I mean, the guy was just, you know, the guy was shooting better than 50% from three last year. You know, he's going to be able to play D in the NBA. There's such a premium on you know wing players with size who can shoot the three ball right now. It's a perfect time for him to go in. So I think he's got a chance to have a really good career. And he's just, you know, again, he's just such an impressive kid, you know. Of course, he's best friends with Josiah James, you know, the Tennessee freshman this year. And it's too bad we never got to see those guys go at it. I mean, you know, that was going to be – really fun this year, and of course Neesmith gets hurt and they never played against each other, but maybe in the NBA someday.
Maybe so. And it was, you know, to your point, Joe, it was a shame that Neesmith got hurt this year, because I would have been interested to see what Vanderbilt would have looked like throughout the SEC schedule with him in the fold, because we talked yesterday about how much you know, fight they continued to show toward the end of the season, get those three wins in the SEC, which certainly is not where you want to be, but certainly an improvement over last year. I would have really liked to have seen what they could have looked like, maybe a win or two more with Neesmith still in the fold throughout the SEC schedule.
Yeah, it's interesting with that, because I think maybe some guys on this team, you know, benefited just from getting more opportunities, you know, to when he went down. You know, you could look at it and say, well, like, if everything were still centered around Neesmith the whole year, would a guy like Maxwell Evans have you know, emerged the way he did? Even Dylan Dessou, maybe. You know, Saban Lee, again, had to kind of change roles and become both the creator and scorer, and he was more in the mode of creating and trying to get Neesmith shots. But, I mean, still, overall, yeah, with him, and if some of those guys had come along like they did and they played the team defense they played and executed, and then you add, you know, a first-round pick on the wing shooting 50% from three, I mean, I would have to guess they would have won a few more games in the SEC.
Yeah, now it's going to be interesting if you're Vanderbilt. Obviously, I think you kind of anticipated this was going to happen. He was going to declare for the NBA draft. But, like, where do you go from here? Because we saw some of their younger players continue to build as the season ended last year. They spent, you know, the second half of last season without him. So they have experience playing without him. And some of these younger guys, to your point, Joe, have stepped up and have filled larger roles. Interested to see what they look like next year in the second year under Jerry Stackhouse. We said yesterday, look, like, the coaching part of it, I think you feel really good about from an X's and O's standpoint. We talked about how different SEC coaches around the league really were very high, very much giving high praise to Jerry Stackhouse and the sets he was running, the different looks he was providing on really a game-by-game basis. Said it was really hard to prepare for Vanderbilt because they kind of looked different every time they stepped on the floor just based on the matchup and the team they were playing against. So I'm really interested to see what they look like next year in year two under Jerry Stackhouse. And of course, as is the case with really every college head coaching job, the name of the game as he continues to go forward here is going to be recruiting. And we'll see how effective he's able to be as a recruiter at Vanderbilt, which, as we all know, poses more challenges than your typical SEC school.
Yeah, it does. Now, you can also flip it around and say, hey, how many degrees can you get that give you what a Vanderbilt degree gives you, you know, and you can sell Nashville and you can sell the SEC. And so, I mean, it's still a good place to recruit to. It's just that you got a more limited pool of players, you know, to choose from. But I think just next year, you know, DJ Harvey, Notre Dame recruit, 6'6", a guy who can score the basketball, you know, I guess you could kind of say plug him into the Neesmith role, and I don't you know, you can't expect him to just produce like Neesmith was producing this year, but it's a nice addition. You think of a guy like Dylan Dessou and how much better he could be after a summer in the weight room, even if it's a summer, you know, alone lifting weights. You know, you figure he's, you know, a lot of times you see that big jump from year one to year two. And did they get Cleavon Brown back? If they do, you know, they've got Quentin Melora Brown, a 6'10", 230-pound, you know, redshirt freshman to give him some more help inside. And I just really like Pippen Lee, Jordan Wright. You know, Maxwell Evans is back too. I mean, I think it's really a team that if everything came together, you know, the way you would hope, it could be. I don't know that it can be an NCAA tournament team, but I think a team that can definitely win, you know, a lot more than three games in the SEC next year.
Joe, when you are trying to project players jumping from the college game to the NBA, sometimes, you know, you hear the conversation about, yeah, the potential is really, really high, but also the potential for a bust is pretty high as well. With Neesmith, I've watched him play, and you mentioned the size that he has, his shooting ability. I don't know exactly how high the potential is, but I feel pretty good if I'm a team drafting Neesmith that the floor is not – I mean, he's going to be a good player. I don't have much concern with him just being a total flop in the NBA. How would you kind of assess – what Aaron Neesmith's NBA future could look like?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, he's got the size. I mean, he's demonstrated what he is as a shooter now, you know, for a long enough period of time that you can expect him to be an efficient shooter. There's a high value on that in the league. So, you know, at the very least, he's a rotational guy who can hit shots for you, who has the size to guard people. I think if he's going to be, you know, more than that, if he's going to be a standout player in the league, he's got to get better with the ball. He's got to be able to do more putting the ball on the floor. And certainly that's something you can keep working on. I mean, just because sometimes it's like, you know, guys, you know, stay in college, you're developing, you know, you're not ready for the NBA. But it doesn't mean that you are done developing. I mean, when you go to the NBA now, that's all you do. It's your job. So I still think that a guy like Aaron Neesmith could get a lot better. A lot of guys now, there's a lot more shuttling back and forth between the G League and the NBA now. I mean, teams like doing that now, and it's less stigmatized now. So, you know, if Neesmith spent some of next year in the G League, I wouldn't be that surprised by that. But teams like that because they can get guys, you know, game time, keep them in game shape, and get them, you know, to play against other good competition. And it keeps them sharper. And before, it was almost like you were just being exiled if you were bounced to the, you know, what it used to be called the D League. So,
yeah.
You know, but no, I agree with you. I think the floor, you feel good about that. I think he's going to be able to come right in and help somebody.
When we come back, our good friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us as he does every week at this time. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in your Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, it's that time of the week. We bring in our good friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Absolutely. So, Josh, you tweeted this out yesterday, and I was unaware of this yesterday until you tweeted it out. Yesterday was the 10-year anniversary of Tennessee beating Ohio State in the Sweet 16 to advance to the Elite Eight for the first time in team history. What do you remember most about that tournament and that game?
Well, it was a Tennessee basketball team that had quite a season because earlier in the year, Tennessee had the arrests of a few players, including the dismissal of Tyler Smith, who was a team leader. And then Tennessee had the incredible upset of number one Kansas. And then it was a Tennessee basketball team that had, you know, had a fine season, but it was a sixth seed in the NCAA tournament. This was not one of Bruce Pearl's teams that was expected to do the most, at least compared to a couple of others, including one that 2 years earlier had won the SEC championship outright in the regular season and ended up in the Sweet 16 against just, you know, a better Louisville team that was a better matchup. In that Ohio State game, you had a team that was really good, and you know, Tennessee caught a break, I think, on the – on the road to that Sweet 16, catching Ohio in the previous round. But going up against the Ohio State team, there was no break, and they had to beat Evan Turner and company. And it came down to the wire, went back and forth, and different players stepped up and made plays for Tennessee in that game. J.P. Prince, Brian Williams had a big tip in there late, Wayne Chisholm, Scotty Hobson. And it was just it was a team with a bunch of personality, and I think had taken on a really big underdog role and very, very well could have gotten to the Final Four, just came up short, of course, in the next round against Michigan State. But it's incredible to think that it's been 10 years, and it's incredible to think of all the different things that have happened with Tennessee athletics and Tennessee basketball in the last 10 years.
Yeah, it is incredible. Were you there, Josh, in St. Louis?
I was in Knoxville. I was not.
Okay, I was on press row for obviously I covered Michigan State at the time, so and for the Ohio State game, which I was, I remember being stunned because I really thought Evan Turner and that Ohio State team might win the thing. If you guys remember that, yeah, that tournament, Kansas lost to Northern Iowa in first or second round, but the first weekend, which was, Kansas was the clear favorite. Like everybody this year is like, Kansas, they probably would have won it. And I'm like, yeah, I can give you some examples of some other Kansas teams that we thought might have won it. But no, that was an amazing weekend. And you're right. I mean, they absolutely had a chance to beat Michigan State. It came down to Draymond Green pass it to Raymond Morgan, and it was a foul at the rim with 1.something seconds left. I remember in real time, it was like, oh, he got hammered. But then you actually watch the replay, and it was like, I don't know about that call. I mean, it was one of those things where, it's hard to blame the official for making the call in real time because it looked like there was no way to stop him without fouling him. But actually, it may have been a clean defensive play. But, as Vols fans know, that's as close as Tennessee has gotten to the Final Four. And we all thought a year ago that might change.
Yeah, and Tennessee was that close. And it's just another reminder because we have a countless number of how close teams can be to advancing or not, depending on which round we're talking about, because the Ohio State game comes down at the very end. They had a shot or two. The last shot was a real desperation heave, and Tennessee actually defended it maybe a little too tightly for some of the fans liking it at the end. But Tennessee got out of there with the win. And then against Michigan State, if Scotty Hobson hits the free throw, who knows, but he misses the free throw, and there's the run out to lead to what you're talking about there, Joe, and it's how close it can be. And then for sure the Purdue game, because we're talking about the Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield team from a year ago, because that was a team that was number one in the country for four straight weeks and for sure had, I think, the makeup to be a team that could make a run to try to win a championship. It came up short, and you have the controversy with the call on Edwards 3, so there's a lot you can play there, but the Iowa game was wild before that for Tennessee. And Loyola Chicago a couple years ago, that's a game where Tennessee could have won at the end. And it has a shot that goes for the opponent. Jordan Bone misses. So, yeah, at this point, I'm just bringing up the devastating message for Tennessee fans. But, the teams that were really built to be there, they came up short, but they very easily could have gotten it done. That's the madness of the tournament.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us. And Josh, yesterday Pro Football Focus came out and asked people what they thought the top five quarterbacks that they've seen in college football, who would they be? I'm not going to sit here and ask you what your top five would be off the top of your head, but if I were to ask you who is the best college football quarterback you've ever seen, who would it be and why?
Well, we're coming off the season that Joe Burrow just had, which was really kind of unreasonable, especially with some of the numbers he put up. I lean toward this conversation looking at just at the peak, what he did at his best. And I come back to what Cam Newton did in 2010. It's difficult to not go that direction. Tim Tebow, when you consider at his best and over the course of a career, helping win multiple championships leading to one, that's going to come to mind. We just had so many great quarterback seasons, and I know numbers have changed as well in terms of what they're able to do. And also the way offenses are run to help quarterbacks both run and throw the football. And then a guy that I think deserves more conversation and play in a different style offense, but in terms of dominance of the team and him helping lead the way, I come back to Tommy Frazier a lot in the mid-90s with Nebraska. and what he was able to do in that offense. So Danny Werfel at Florida, I'm a little younger. Some would go further back in their time. But if I just choose the one season, the one guy that I want to go lead the way for me, I'd probably come back to Cam Newton.
Those are all good names. I'm a little surprised there was no mention of Peyton Manning. You know, a guy who I always thought when watching Peyton Manning, obviously we know what he, you know, he's going to be remembered as one of the top handful of quarterbacks ever play the game. But even in college, I always thought, you know, those Tennessee teams couldn't stop Spurrier's offense, or else, you know, maybe Peyton Manning has a little bit different trophy case too.
Yeah, that's true, and I'll probably get in trouble because I didn't. If you trade Werfel and Peyton, we can do this in the NFL, right, with Peyton and Brady, because you could have a longer-term argument. If Peyton's with the Patriots, do we really believe he has one or two Super Bowls? Two, of course, when you include him going to Denver. I would say no. I would think he has more. And if he goes to Florida, does he have another SEC championship and probably a national championship? I would think yes. But he didn't. So, of course, Peyton's up there. And if you have Peyton on your side, you're going to try to go win the game with one quarterback, then you're going to have a really good chance with Peyton on your side. So there's nothing wrong with taking Peyton. And it's not his fault he didn't win the Heisman. He should have, in my opinion. It's an incredible Heisman class, by the way. Different conversation for a different day. But I still lean to guys that ended up winning it all for that that final conversation.
Josh, speaking of Peyton Manning, he joined an online class at Tennessee to kind of encourage the students. And it's hard to tell from like a Zoom conference, but it looked like some of them didn't really know who he was and who was talking to them. Have we officially gotten to the point that we are so old that some college kids don't know who Peyton Manning is, even at Tennessee?
Yeah, these conversations have a way of really upsetting me because, you know, it's like the Michael Jordan conversation, it's not the kid's fault, but there's the story of a Sports Illustrated writer speaking to a class of maybe fourth graders. You guys might have seen the story from a time before, and Michael Jordan's brought up, and the kids aren't quite sure who he is, and then it's pointed out, well, the guy on the shoes, and they recognize, oh, the Jordan shoes, not the guy that's probably the greatest basketball player of all time. And a pro athlete whose son was talking to Bo Jackson and wasn't quite sure about Bo Jackson's athletic career. Did you play pro sports? Yeah, just might be the best athlete of all time. So we're just going to have more of these conversations, and it's not the not the kid's fault. If anything, it's on us. And I've actually said in the last week, not jokingly, with the vaults being open, the NBA Classic games you can go watch, and the NFL, what they've done, and Major League Baseball yesterday with some games for opening day, which didn't happen. Continue to keep these available so that kids and dads with their kids can go back and watch the games, and we can relive them. It's just a way to connect the history of the sport. So college athletics and pro, the more games from before the time that kids are coming up watching sports. There was the video of the Christian Laettner shot this past weekend where a couple of kids are, I guess, Kentucky fans, and they see the Laettner shot for the first time,
yes.
And they're learning, wait, we lost the game? Yeah, 28 years ago. But to them, it was happening for the first time, and that's just, even though that's a heartbreak, it still is a connection. It's a way for fans to learn about the past as well.
I thought it was kind of mean, some of these Kentucky fan parents, like, hey, let's experience this together, kids. And then you see these, like 6-year-old, like, oh, starting to cry because, like, he should like he has to experience that too. I actually,
well, it's mean, but it's therapeutic, I think, because while we're in these quarantines, I think we're trying to get whatever is emotional that we're dealing with out. Also, I bet the parents are thinking, hey, I cried and my kids are going to cry to that shot.
Exactly. Yeah, so maybe there's, you found an upside here, Josh, is that, by the time, life returns to normal, a lot of people will have watched a lot of, old, videos, classic games, documentaries. I mean, look, my kid and I were watching 88 Pistons Celtics the other day, which,
yeah.
So we keep on uncovering positives here.
Yeah, yeah, and I think more will end up being available through YouTube because some are out there, but you can find some games where you only get like part of the game and you might miss the end of it. That's really not doing you a whole lot of good. So I really do believe the more the leagues can do to help you watch, the better. I talked to a friend, though, yesterday to come back to Tennessee. He said, yeah, I've been watching some games. He pulled up the South Carolina game this past season, which was a really good one for Tennessee. I thought kind of a random one to watch, but he said, I know that I'm going to start to go down some kind of rabbit hole, and I'm going to look for Tennessee losses just to do damage to myself again. He said, I'm going to go watch the Baker Mayfield Oklahoma game. I said, why are you going to do that? And he didn't have a good answer. So, yeah, there are a lot of fans that are going to deal with all that we're going through right now in very different ways.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Josh, thanks as always for joining us, my man. Hope you have a good weekend. Hope you stay safe.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, guys.
See you, Josh.
When we come back, we'll get into a little bit of that Peyton Manning joining the UT class. Did the kids really not know who Peyton Manning was? Are we that old, Joe? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, it was a really funny story coming out of Knoxville. Peyton Manning joined like an online class to help kind of encourage some of his UT students who, you know, the class isn't going the way they thought it would. They're not meeting in person. They're having to do everything online because of the coronavirus situation that's going on. They joined the class via Zoom. Peyton Manning came in to the class, and here's what Peyton Manning had to say to the students at the University of Tennessee.
Now, when you turn the paper in, these are the things that need to be involved with that paper.
Title, centered, halfway down, your name, and then School of Communication Studies, and then University of Tennessee. Mr. Thompson, I think you were late for class.
I'm sorry, Dr. Haas. It's been a while. It's been at least since 1996, 1997 since I've been in a class. So,
if you were here, I'd be making you run the stadium steps for being late.
I understand. Well, these are unique circumstances. I'm sure this is the first virtual Zoom class you've taught in many years, I would think. I just wanted to drop in and say hello to all the fellow communication students there, and realize this is a unique time and probably not the ideal way you guys expected to spend your senior year. But I just encourage you to keep a positive attitude, keep working like you're doing, and try to take advantage of the little bit of the extra time that you have to accomplish something else or help out somebody in need. A lot of people hurting out there during this time. Be thankful for what you have, and just know University of Tennessee is proud of you and going to support you every way you can. And you know, Dr. Haas and his department is going to do the same thing.
And that was Peyton Manning joining the Zoom class. And Joe, it was really funny because if you watch the video that's kind of associated with this, of course, you know, you have some people in there that immediately recognize Peyton Manning. They know who he is. Like, I guess they're getting people who they're quarantining with in their house, and they're, like, bringing them into the room to see Peyton Manning join their class. And there are other people that you could tell, and I would say it's, like, almost half the class you look at on the video, and just by the look on your face, you could tell either, one, they're not impressed by Peyton Manning joining their class, or number two, they have absolutely no idea who is on the line with them. And it was hilarious to me to watch that because the first thing I thought of was, I have officially gotten to the point where I'm so old that kids growing up now, some of them, have no idea who Peyton Manning is.
Yeah, I really want to hear about how old you feel, Robbie. Tell me more about how old you are, Robbie. I'm actually watching it now, so I'm going to. I want to see this for myself because it's still hard for me to believe that would be the case. I mean, I guess. Well, but you think about it, and that's where it just gets scary when you think about, you know, the season that. And I agree, by the way, with Josh Ward. You know, I think Charles Woodson. I like defensive players winning the Heisman, and Charles Woodson was great. And that was an undefeated team, and I get all that. I still think Peyton Manning was. See, now I'm watching the video now, Robbie, and I'm seeing definitely some, like, jaws dropped.
There's some.
Yeah. See, that's the hard part, though, too. It's like, yeah, there's some smiles. Yeah, maybe there are some people, I guess, who are like, huh? It's hard to tell. You know, I mean, I don't know, man. It's tough. Yeah, there's definitely some people who are completely like, whatever.
Well, it depends. Whatever. But it depends on what time this class was, too. Because
yeah,
if this is like an 8 a.m. class, like, I don't care. If Obama would have walked in my 8 a.m. class, I probably would have been like, who's that tall guy? Is that Obama? Oh, okay, cool. What's up, Obama? I'm exhausted, man. College students, man. But that's probably what it was, man. Look, it's probably an 8 a.m. class. People are just like getting out of their bed.
Because there is like a girl on the video that, I mean, you could just tell like her mouth is hanging wide open. And I think she's literally asleep. Like, I think she's listening to Peyton Manning talk and there nothing is registering. I just think she's out of it. So is that because she doesn't know who they are? Like, is it too early in the morning? I don't know. But it was kind of interesting to watch that video.
Well, as funny thing, as it goes on, I'm still watching it. As we get later into it, there's a lot more smiling and stuff, so maybe it's also like sort of half jolted awake and also like oh that's who that is, you know what I mean? So you know, it's I mean, hey, again, we're talking 23 years ago that he should have won the Heisman, that he was a senior at Tennessee. So I mean, it is crazy to think of that. And again, okay, so you're talking about feeling old. So this means you were what, 4 then? Were you 4?
Yeah, buddy, I was. sure was.
So, like, as a 4-year-old, do you remember watching a Peyton Manning game?
To be honest with you, the first Tennessee game that I remember watching was the national championship game when they beat Florida State. And
that's
only
a good
reason
first
I
memory.
Remember that is because I had a splinter in my foot that day, and I remember just watching the game with a splinter in my foot at like the age of 5. Watching T. Martin and company go win a national championship.
Well, I mean, if you're going to have a first memory, right?
It's all been downhill since then, to watch the Tennessee game.
Yeah, yeah. But still, at least you remember that. I mean, you know, it's on the same sort of thing, not to that extent, but like, you know, my kids with like Michigan State football, I'm like, you know, you guys are so spoiled. I mean, they weren't good for decades. So, you know, just get over yourselves if they lose a game. But got to keep things in perspective.
Maybe they go back there with Mel Tucker. Maybe your kids get some perspective now. What do you think? How do you like Mel Tucker at Michigan State?
Yeah, he seems all right. I mean, I think it was time for a change. So we'll see. You know, he's got to deal with the great overrated one, Jim Harbaugh. But still, Harbaugh, you know, recruits really well and is a good coach and has good teams. Harbaugh's just, you know, a guy who came in and people were like, oh, he'll win a national title by year 3, you know. So he's overrated. He's also still really good. And it makes that job hard if you ask Nick Saban. Look, I covered Nick Saban there, and when he went out, he said, it's hard because, you know, you're an hour away from Michigan, and that's just a tough, you know, that's tough to have that in your backyard. Ohio State has nothing in its state to compete with, right? I mean, it makes a difference. And Tennessee, really, in this state, does not have, you know, it has Vanderbilt as a rival, but that's not really a recruiting, you know, challenger on every kid like Michigan and Michigan State are, you know, in that state. So you think about that in terms of in-state, like Florida, obviously there's a ton of programs that compete, but there's also so much talent that there's enough for you know, to go around.
Joe, it is interesting because this is kind of like the first time I'm kind of growing up and dealing with this of the generation after mine coming up and not really knowing like who some of the athletes I looked up to were. Like my generation, you know, I was born in 92. I was kind of like right on the fringe of Michael Jordan because, like, you know, in the prime of Michael Jordan's career, you know, I was like 4 years old, 5 years old. So I don't really remember watching Michael Jordan play during his time with the Bulls. I remember watching him play actually with the Wizards more than I do him with the Bulls. But, you know, I remember Kobe and D-Wade and LeBron, you know, growing up and watching that. I went and talked to a high school class a couple weeks ago. Not only did they not know who Michael Jordan was, like, I mean, they knew who he was, but they don't remember watching him play. A lot of those kids, they don't even really remember watching Kobe play during his prime. Like, yeah, you got to think about it. Like, the last time they won a championship was 2010, and the kids I were talking to in that class, they were like 7 years old when that happened. So, like, they didn't even really have much of a concept of what watching prime Kobe Bryant was like, and I was just floored by that.
Yeah. No, that's depressing. And obviously, I mean, I'm thinking for me, like, I remember Earl Campbell some, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's very different for me. I mean, think about really young kids now who are like, oh yeah, Tom Brady, the Bucks quarterback, right? You know, on the same idea there, Robbie, recruiting. And I actually wrote about the Lady Vols this week with that in mind, which is, you know, as you go, as years go by, and you could look at Tennessee football the same way, as years go by and you're recruiting kids who don't remember watching, you know, Tennessee in the Final Four, or don't remember, you know, Tennessee football when it was playing in SEC championship games, things like that. I mean, that absolutely makes it harder. If you have a stretch of years where you're not, you know, kind of visible in that way, and now you're recruiting kids who their only sports watching experience is you being average, it does make it harder. I mean, it really does. I mean, there's something to be said for just growing up and who you watched on TV and who was in the big games that gives some programs an edge and some not. And that's why, like, for the Lady Vols in particular, I mean, I think this is an urgent time to try to get back there, because in every other way, they still are, you know, an elite supported program that should be a Final Four contender, but as years go by, it does get harder.
No question. I mean, that's certainly a different part of it that you've got to realize now as you're some of these programs as we move forward. When we come back, Joe, you guys at The Athletic had a really interesting discussion about the Nashville Sports Hall of Fame that you guys put together at The Athletic. I want to get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.